WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Jamie Floyd in for Brian Lehrer. This is WNYC and WNYC.org. Our February weekly series on life and politics in the New York area suburbs continues today. Larry Levy, Executive Director of the National Center for Suburban Studies at Hofstra University, is back with us. Today's topic, the shifting demographics in the burbs. The suburbs are no longer just populated with middle-class white families going after the picket fence and backyard. A third of New York area suburbanites are Hispanic, Black, or Asian, and that figure is rising. And contrary to stereotypes, the majority of new migrants are not low-income laborers, but people from all walks of life. So let's talk about it. Larry Levy, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me back. Great to be here.
I'm very, very excited about this segment because I know nothing about it. So let's get started on Long Island.
Sure.
You've written about the stereotypes of immigrants in suburban Long Island, that they're mainly low-income Latinos, many of whom are day laborers. But what I've now read is that this is simply not true, right?
Right. I mean, there are plenty of low-wage Latino day laborers, and they make their contribution, and they have their challenges. But the overwhelming percentage of new immigrants are people with who earn paychecks the old-fashioned way. They pay their withholding taxes. You know, they pay their property taxes. In some neighborhoods, they are propping up the residential real estate market by buying homes that white middle-class people you described have not been able to sell. And they are reviving whole neighborhood main streets, and it's a remarkable phenomenon.
And you write about, this is what truly amazes me, you write about, of course, not just workers, as you say, but entrepreneurs,
yes,
business owners, lawyers, doctors. Give us some examples.
Jamie, when my folks came out here in the 50s, I mean, literally, you know, not to overdo the alliteration, but they came out here with a down payment and a dream, and they wanted, you know, better schools, a little more space for the kids to play in. The new immigrants moving out here not only, you know, have their down payment and they not only have their dreams, but they're bringing fairly well-developed resumes. They're bringing investments. You know, they are the new customers. They are the new employees. They are the new investors out here on Long Island. And it is the key to our social and economic survival, not just in this suburb, but in many other suburbs that have seen what's called a youth drain of you know, white young people between the ages of 18 and 34. Well, they're going to be replaced if these communities are hospitable. They're going to be replaced by Indian, Asian, Latino, both low wage and middle class, and other groups that are bypassing cities and coming directly from their countries.
Hmm. Well, we want our suburban listeners to call in, suburban immigrants and others to call in. Tell us why you live in the suburbs. If you moved from the city, tell us why you moved. Or if you moved directly to the suburbs, we want to hear about that as well. How is life different for immigrants in the suburbs than in the city? Give us a call, 212-433-WNYC. That's 212-433-9692. Or you can post a comment online at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. You wrote about Little Punjab. It sounds as though there are whole suburban communities of culture cropping up in the suburbs.
Yes, in the community of Hicksville, which is out in the town of Oyster Bay, not that far from the Nassau County and Suffolk County lines. It started 20 years ago, very, very slowly, with a couple of Indian merchants, Sikh and non-Sikh, opening up shops, a restaurant, what we used to call a trinket store. And then eventually their success and their contacts and the word got out, and more businesses began being bought up by Indian businessmen and women, by Pakistani, Afghani, and other groups. But primarily it's an Indian community. And when I went in there and interviewed a number of people in the shops, one woman in particular said, you know, when we came out 20 years ago, and they first moved to Queens and then to Long Island, there were many foods, there were many pieces of clothing and other cultural items that you'd have to search far and wide for. Now you can just walk down a street in Hicksville, and she said, this is like Little Punjab, and that's where that expression came from.
You mentioned the first wave of Irish, Italian, Jewish immigrants who populated the suburbs post-World War II and might have spent a couple generations living in the cities before moving out, but this wave migrating to the suburbs with far less or maybe no time even spent in the cities. Say a little bit more about that. How do you explain that, bypassing the city altogether?
Right. That's the biggest difference between my parents' pioneering generation that came out here and populated the suburbs in the 50s and 60s. Their parents, their grandparents even, came over on the ships and passed through Ellis Island and spent a couple of generations in the city learning the language, learning the customs. Unfortunately for some families, unlearning their old customs. Nowadays, you have folks coming directly from overseas. They still see America, beat a cliche, as a land of opportunity. They still see that whatever investment or education experience that they managed to amass in India or in Korea or in China has value here. And instead of going to cities where, remember, the first immigrants went there because they needed to be with people who spoke their own language. They needed to be in a place where you could get really cheap housing. These new immigrants don't need the cheap housing. They speak our language in many respects, and they want for their children better schools than at least they think they can find in the city.
Let's take a call, Larry, from Nito in Stamford, Connecticut, who I think speaks directly to that point. Nito, you're on WMYC.
Hi. Actually, I'm a first-generation Latino. Both my parents are immigrants. When they first came to this country, they went straight to Manhattan, to Washington Heights, and that's where I was raised. But about 7 years ago, we left the city to Stamford, Connecticut. And we came over here mostly because the city became very expensive, very hard to live. The suburbs provided way better job opportunities, better schools. And what I've seen just in Stamford alone, when I moved here 7 years ago, there was a big Latino community, a big immigrant community. But what I'm seeing more and more is more New Yorkers. It's become like everybody here is from New York. And it's funny because when I first moved here, I felt all alone. I felt like an immigrant. And now I feel like, oh, I'm not alone anymore. There's so many people leaving the city for better opportunities, and they're finding them here because here there's plenty of jobs. Here rent isn't through the roof yet. It's not like in the city, and it's become a much better atmosphere for us anyway, and especially me that I'm only 26, and I just find life has become a lot easier living here than in the city. I love the city. I love New York, and I always will, but it's just we've had better opportunity here.
Larry Levy, it sounds as though the suburbs are a bit of a home away from home with so many city people finding themselves in the suburbs. As Nito says, he feels as if he's in the city even though he's not.
Yeah, the majority of people, of the new immigrants moving to places like Long Island and Stamford are coming from cities. But more and more of them are bypassing the city. Hmm. Now, in fact, people I interviewed told me that they shopped online for a home in Seoul, Korea, to try to purchase a place to live on Long Island. They shop school districts in particular. And in some cases, families that could not on their own afford to live in some of the upscale neighborhoods with the best schools, again, on Long Island, are living a couple of families. It's not like the stereotype of the low-wage, you know, workers who are 32 a room. This is a brother, a couple of cousins, and they will pool their resources, sometimes work the same business, and send their children to a district like Jericho or Syosset, which are in the top 10 or 20 in the country.
Well, and the internet is, of course, facilitating some of that because you can do all of this from overseas online. Let's talk a little more about affordable housing, which, of course, is a huge issue in any city environment, certainly in New York City. And, you know, city and state governments try to use public subsidies and incentives to help with affordable housing. This is a very political debate, of course. There's this gap between rich and poor in the city. But let's talk a little bit more about how that plays out in the suburbs.
Well, the gap between rich and poor is a real problem in the suburbs as well. We have some of the wealthiest communities. I'll stick to Long Island for a second. It's the area I know better than the others. It has some of the wealthiest communities in America, some of the highest achieving and biggest spending school districts in America. Overall, its achievement levels are solid, but it also has a dozen of some of the worst performing suburban school systems in the state and in some cases the country. So there is a huge gap. But when I was an editorial writer at Newsday, I wrote a series called The Shame of the Suburbs, because with all this wealth, you had these islands of want, and which were able to exist because of small school districts that allowed segregation to persist, allowed racial steering to persist, and you couldn't shift students to break up these clusters of minority and poor students.
And this is a tension to this day, but certainly dates back, I think now, of course, about busing in the 70s. I mean, this is not a new debate. This is an age-old problem in not only cities, but certainly in the suburbs dating back to the 70s and even 1960s. Isn't that right, Larry?
Right. Well, New York City or big urban districts have a much more difficult time perpetuating segregated schools. If the Justice Department were approached with a case by a civil rights group and say, look, we have one school on one side of town with 97% African-American and another on the other side of town with 97% white, the Justice Department, probably even under Bush in that circumstance, would say you can't do that. On Long Island, they get away with it because you can't order one district to send its kids to another district or a district to take kids from another district. They get away with that. New York City's one district. You can order kids to be moved within district, but you can't order them moved between districts. And that's how the Long Island gets away with this segregated school system.
And similar problems in Westchester and other parts of the state. Since you bring up the race question, let's talk a little bit about racial tension. There's a bit of a mythology about a lack of racial tension in New York City, and perhaps there's a mythology about tremendous racial tension in the suburbs. Is there more or less racial tension than in the city? Is that a stereotype reinforced by the media?
That gets into mushy ground, but it's an interesting topic.
Well, then let's get into it,
well,
Larry.
Well, yeah, the comparison, I would want to see, since I began running a research institute, I'm much more, would rather talk when I have data. But to that issue.
And data is a hard thing to get when you're talking about race because
absolutely.
People say thing and they do and feel something else.
That's right. But on Long Island, if there is a lack of racial tension, it's because we still have a tremendously segregated community. And if blacks are living in their own communities, so to speak, and not interacting with whites, the possibilities of tense confrontations is less. And when blacks do live in communities with whites, they tend to be vastly in the minority. You have either all minority or mostly minority schools or mostly white schools with a smattering of interesting integrated communities that are in flux one way or another. Where you're seeing tension, Jamie, which is both interesting and unfortunate, is between African Americans and Latinos in some of the poorer communities who are fighting over, you know, very thin turf. We're seeing that now in Wyandanche. We see that in Freeport. We're seeing that in Hempstead. We're seeing that in Roosevelt. These are places where there are meager resources in the schools to begin with. And more Latinos are moving in, and the parents justifiably, rightly, want to make sure that their kids are getting services that may mean more English as a second language. The parents who are already there are saying, well, wait a second, we have a limited budget. We're not getting any more from taxes. We can't get any more from the state. You're going to be taking away from my kids. And it's created tension right down, from the neighborhood gang level on up to the school board level.
It's more often about resources than it is about race. Let's take a call on that from Deanna in Cortland Manor. Deanna, you're on WMYC.
Hi there. I'm actually a transplanted New Yorker originally from the Bronx. And the problem that I find in the suburbs is I'm Latino. I mean, my family is predominantly Puerto Rican, but up in Westchester County, the predominant Latino population up there is either South or Central American. So it's not, you know, a lot of people think that maybe the tension is whites resenting a big Latino population, but I also find that we don't necessarily fit in with the group that's up there either.
Right. Mm. Yeah, there is a, you know, this is she gets very pointedly to the point of.
And Larry, you have about 1 minute to deal with a huge issue, so go ahead.
Whites tend to create this myth of the minority monolith, that all minorities tend to think the same, they're willing to work together, but the reality is that various Latino groups are uncomfortable with each other for a variety of reasons, which we obviously don't have time to get into. There are tensions between African-American and Latinos, and there's tensions within the African-American communities, between Haitian, Caribbean, and it goes beyond nomenclature.
Well, an important lesson, Larry, on that note. We'll end it for this week, and we look forward to continuing the conversation with you. Larry Levy, Executive Director of the National Center for Suburban Studies at Hofstra University. And up next after the break, a new report about felony disenfranchisement in New York State. Stay with us. I'm Jamie Floyd.